All right. Thanks, everyone. I'm Nick Bradbeer. I am a naval architect rather than a wargamer, but over the last 10 years, I have increasingly done more wargaming as part of my day job because I decided it would be fun, and then, to our surprise, it turned out to be useful, so we've done more and more of it. I'm stuck between two worlds. I actually work for the Ministry of Defence as a naval constructor, but I am posted to University College London as an associate professor, basically to run our course in warship design and then our course in submarine design. But I work in defence procurement, and I work for the Submarine Delivery Agency now, which is a procurement agency, and over the last year or so, we've started using the war games we developed for teaching in an increasingly wider set of areas and actually using them as part of defence procurement processes now. So to start with my bottom line up front, if we get into the rest of the presentation, in the analytical wargaming panel, I'm actually here to say why we don't really do analytical wargaming. We do something slightly different, which is, you know, I guess I'm number three, time to throw in a grenade. Traditionally, we're used to operations analysis informing wargaming. Operations analysis gives us mathematical models, which we can build our combat resolution tables or whatever on top of. But actually, wargaming can be really useful for informing operations analysis, the other way around. And we are finding that for our use case, sometimes it's more useful to use a war game to inform an analytical process that's something different than to run an analytical war game. So that's what I'm going to talk about now, really quickly. So this is our outline. We're going to say, start with what's the problem, which is basically procurement's really hard, with a corollary problem that operations analysis is also really hard. Then talk about how the two can interact and help each other, and then quickly go through some outputs, the sort of things we might hope to get out of this, how we generate insights in the process, and then some challenges to bear in mind. I need to make the same disclaimer. These are my opinions. This is not the position of the MOD. And a second disclaimer, which is very important, is none of the examples that I'm going to mention have been taken from real procurement projects. They might be similar to, but nothing in here is taken from an actual analytical process that we have used for real. So first up, the procurement problem. So there's this fundamental relationship at the center of most military procurement projects. We have the customer who wants the thing, whether that is a jet fighter, a warship, a submarine. For us, that's usually Navy Command. So they are a bunch of naval officers who decide what the Navy wants in future, and they ask the Ministry of Defence to acquire those things. Then we have the MOD project team, which might be design authority, it might not. I've not really labelled that box correctly. But that's a project team of civil service engineers and other disciplines as well, who take Navy Command's request, and then they arrange matters to have the thing bought. And then you have the builder, the person who will, or the group that will actually make the thing. That's usually a commercial contracting organization. And this relationship is pretty wobbly. As we go through time, we change how we want to do procurement. We change who's going to carry what risk. We might actually change the structure of it. So at the core of it, there's this rough relationship, but the details change a lot. At some point in this process, someone has to define a requirement to say what the thing that we're going to buy needs to do. Now, in your traditional approach, the customer decides that, and they tell the project team, I want a thing that does this. The project team then works out what that means in engineering terms, and they write a contract for someone to deliver them one of those things. Sometimes you'll produce the requirement at different places because axiomatically the customer doesn't know what they want. So sometimes actually the project team produce some of the requirement. Sometimes you give a very loose effects-based requirement to the builder and let them come up with some way to meet it. But fundamentally a requirement gets produced. And you need analytical data to base that requirement on, because you're about to spend an awful lot of money, usually. Now, that is something wargaming is bad at. It's not, wargaming is not repeatable, it gives you a single snapshot. So we're not going to get a solid analytical base out of a war game. So traditionally, we go to operations analysts. They do lots of different things, but as far as we're concerned, fundamentally, OA people feed into the systems engineering model by building a model, an OA model, which allows us to turn measures of performance into measures of effectiveness. So measures of performance, things that are easy to measure, speed, number of missile salvos available, but not very useful for setting a requirement. Measures of effectiveness are things like who would win in a fight. You know, what's my chance, percentage chance of winning a fight with a kilo-class submarine? Measure of effectiveness, really useful, really hard to, for an engineer to derive. And that's where OA models come in. But to build an OA model, you need to know what you care about measuring. And we're building complex systems. We need to understand how those metrics interact with each other. Now, the engineer's instinct in this situation is, well, we will model everything. We'll build a comprehensive, mathematically based model of this system, every aspect of it, of every system it connects with, and you are suddenly attempting to model the entire world. Tragically, we always have finite and limited OA resource. So we can't do that. OA is what we need, but we need to figure out where to aim the OA. And that is where wargaming is really useful for this process. So, as I said, traditionally we're used to OA feeding into wargaming. This wouldn't be a connections paper if I didn't mention Peter Perler. That's a diagram from The Art of Wargaming. The whole chapter that this diagram is in basically just says the way OA and wargaming relate is OA feeds data into wargaming. But then in this diagram, it does have an arrow going both ways. And it's that arrow going the other way from wargaming into analysis rather than from analysis into wargaming that I think is really useful to focus on. So for some problems, it's difficult to know what attributes are important. If you are designing a ship that has, well, it's got speed, it's got sensors, it's got weapon systems, it's got survivability characteristics, there's lots of different things, and is speed important? That's actually a really hard question to answer. You can build a mathematical model of speed relating to other things, but it's very difficult to go straight to a solution there. The other kind of problem is, what's the relationship between performance and effectiveness? For something like price of entry for a warship, that's the number of anti-ship missiles I'd need to fire at it in order to have a good chance of breaking through its defensive systems. The relationship there is not going to be non-linear. If the price of entry of a ship is 7, that's not significantly better than if it's 6. But if the jump from 6 to 7 is quite small, the jump from 7 to 8 is much bigger because lots of adversary warships carry 8 anti-ship missiles. So there are these non-linear thresholds in most of these things we care about. And wargaming is a really good tool for understanding these problems, which means it's quite a good supporting tool for OA. So we might have different kinds of problem to solve for procurement. A new warship, we understand warships, we built lots of warships before, but it's hard because there are lots of different possible inputs and they all interact in a really complex manner. A new missile system is a different type of problem. The new missile systems probably conceptually exist. A contractor has at least designed these systems and they have shiny brochures. And those shiny brochures and data sheets will tell you, this missile goes this fast, it's got a warhead this size, it's got funky stealthy features. It's really hard to take a brochure and correlate that into how good will that be. Because you might be comparing a small, lightweight, subsonic, but stealthy with a really smart seeker system missile versus a missile that's supersonic with a 1,000 kilogram warhead but is 3 tons, and you can fit 2 of them on your ship. It's a very apples and oranges thing, and yet you have to make that comparison. And finally, you have problems where you have an entirely novel capability. So, uncrewed surface vehicles. How will we even use those? So how do we build a model to say how good they are? So to build your OA model, you need to make assumptions. Assumptions are what we all rest upon. Things like, how will I tactically employ this new piece of equipment? Especially if it's something novel like a USV, but even if it's a missile system. If it's a much longer range or shorter range missile system than I'm used to, how will that change how my whole Navy operates? How will it interact with other friendly systems? Hugely important, if it's something like a USV, that's not ever going to be operating alone, it's always part of a larger system. And then the enemy gets a vote. How does the enemy react to me deploying this? How will they counter it? And then how can we evolve to counter their counter? An OA model, very, very difficult to answer these questions. But a war game, or more importantly, a series of war games, actually very good at answering these kind of questions. And there's another one which kind of cropped up. We didn't really expect this, but if you're doing a series of war games, you can answer the question, you know, you've got into this arms race, we're countering a thing, the enemy's done something unexpected. Is there something else that we could buy that would make this easier? And so you might be going into war game one thing, and one of the findings of that war game is, this would be great if we also had this different thing, which we weren't thinking about, but now we are. So what might a typical game look like? I don't think there is such a thing as a typical game here, but this is an example. We have run a couple of actual project games like this. Those games were 3 days, so they fit neatly in a week. You game Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, which gives you a day for the team to get set up and a day for the team to get taken away at the end. Within 3 days, you're going to have half a day for training, getting everyone on board, explaining the game, running a first iteration. You can have four game cycles, if a game cycle is about half a day. And then half a day of worship at the end. We had about 15 to 30 people, because you always want at least two people on any one side, so that they have to discuss things. So 2 to 4 people on each side, and the majority of the participants are in the white cell, or non-player observers. It's really important to have operations analysts and subject matter experts on hand, partly because they will get insights, and partly they can guide the game, and also, often, they can reach back. So we had questions come up when no one in the room knew the answer, but somebody could get on the phone to their office and say, hey, do we have a model for this? Obviously, we hot wash after every game. So sit everyone down, what do we learn? What are our insights? And one real kicker is we can iterate between games. So with a manual war game, if you discover it would be good to have something, if you're doing an afternoon, and morning game, you've got two nights over which your overworked game team can iterate the game and add something in. And we've done that several times. Last two slides. How do we generate those insights? They can come up at different points in the process. Sometimes, simply researching the game will generate insights, where you actually go and read all of these things. Generally, when I write a war game, I have to go and read a bunch of stuff about other people's disciplines. So I know just enough to be dangerous about sonar, electronic warfare, a whole bunch of things I've never really studied. But doing that reading often sparks realizations. Before you do the war game, you go through a playtest process. And as part of that process, you'll probably do at least one TTX, where you run through the game and you're not really doing the adversarial side. And sometimes just cranking the handle and walking through the process will generate insights. During the game, you've got your hot washes, so where your players will generate insights after each game. But also, this is where it's important to have your non-player subject matter experts keeping an eye on the game. They will often notice stuff during the game. And your operations analysts can just sit there and kind of absorb, and it can help shape where they want to build the model. So we shift the question we're trying to war game from what capabilities should this thing have to how would I use this? And that's much, much easier to game. And lastly, some things which we need to bear in mind. This process does have limitations. As always, we're really sensitive to our assumptions. You need to, if you're building an analytical model, you need to model your sensitivity to the assumptions. That is something which the OA analysts will probably take care of because they're used to that, but we need to bear in mind. Data gaps remain a huge problem. And bizarrely, I have often found the hardest data gaps are our allies. Because for your own stuff, you can usually call a project team and they'll tell you how it works. For your adversaries, you've probably got intelligence agencies who are trying to figure that out, but are probably not spying on your allies. So actually working out what your allied nation's equipment does, often the trickiest bit. And finally, non-repeatability. As with all war games, you get a snapshot that tells you one outcome of one situation. And it's really important to remember not to generalize that. So that is, with 5 seconds left, me. Thank you very much.